Winfrey. This is Monday, May 28th, and this is our Monday conference call, CBS simulcast. Notice there's two of me.
That's good. Move the lines, please, man.
Move the lines.
This is an echo.
I hear the echo, too.
That's my producer. You know, we didn't get to greet anybody on the, everybody on the line. And, Hi, so why don't you take a moment, just quickly, and people say their name and their city, because we were busy doing the technical stuff. And there they're coming on. So would you like to do that?
Yes, certainly. Welcome, everybody, to the BBS call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, it's Tracy Jean Brittany. Hi.
All right, we did that.
Time.
Later.
Daphne?
Great.
My name is Kara Woods, Boulder City, Nevada.
All right. Welcome, Mr. Woods, and hello, Tracy.
Hi, Gina. From
I hear Gina.
From Oahu, Hawaii. Happy Memorial Day to everybody.
Now, I want you guys to know you're all live right now, okay? So be careful how you introduce yourself, okay?
All right, the next person, please say your name and location.
Greetings, everyone. This is Rami in Charleston, South Carolina.
Hello, Rami. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Next person, please say your name and location.
This is
Hello.
From West Virginia. Hi.
Hello. Welcome to the call.
Terry from West Virginia, was it?
Yeah.
Yes. West Virginia.
Okay. And who was that guy there, Hi?
That was Jim from Mashpee, Massachusetts.
Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Good to have you on. Now, Jim, you're on the air now. We're broadcasting on the Internet, so don't say anything nasty. That's okay. I don't want to control you. If you have something nasty to say, it's okay. Go ahead, guys.
Next person, please say your name and location. Well, welcome, everybody. Also, those folks who don't say their name, I win the mic to you.
Okay, just the one person who was from Nevada, his last name was Woods. Was his first name Kim?
Pierre. I had met you in, actually, through Gene.
Pierre. Pierre?
Pierre with a K, yeah.
Pierre.
Yes.
Where did I meet you? I met you at the Ravenheart Coffee
Shop. I met you at Gene's apartment, actually, and the first words you said to me were, you live in another dimension. That was it was interesting.
Well, was I right?
Yes, you were. As a matter of fact, for years I kind of have off and on, you know, it just kind of comes and goes.
All right. Well, I met you in Gene's apartment?
Yeah, it was. You stopped in there and you gave me your book, actually, and the pamphlet. We chatted for maybe 25 minutes at the most.
God, and I didn't charge you for a consulting fee, huh?
That's funny.
Now, the big question is, who is Gene?
Gene, he did work for you. He was the short guy.
Gene. Gene.
Yeah, Gene, yes.
Okay.
And I met you there, and yeah.
Now I remember. Well, it's very nice to have you on the line. And
thank you.
Is this your first time on the calls?
Yeah, it is. As a matter of fact, I tried calling it a couple times, but it never worked out then. But I did today. Tonight, you know, I'm calling. And
well,
I just want to let you know,
if you're from another dimension, you've got good company on this line. Okay?
Wonderful.
Would you like to say your name and your city?
Hi, this is Edna in Snohomish.
Hi, Edna in Snohomish. That's Washington, for those of you
yes,
who don't.
Yes, that's correct.
And by the way, if you ever thought of joining Team Shift, Edna's the person that coordinates it. And say hello, Edna. Teamshift.messageaday.net. Teamshift.messageaday.net. And who else is on the line?
Hi, this is Jean from South Dakota.
Hi, Jean. Well, you're not the Jean, at least, that I met Pierre in, right?
No.
I didn't think so. That wasn't in South Dakota. That was in Sedona. And next.
Ron in Mountain Grove.
Hey, Ron. That's Ron.
Hey, how you doing?
Hop something, right?
Right.
The last name that sounds like a beer.
Or an ingredient thereof.
All right. And next? Anyone else? Going once, going twice? Anyone want to say anything to Carla before I mute you all?
Carla, I love you.
Hi, Carla. Hope you're feeling better.
Hi, Carla. Thank you.
I love you right
Carla.
Back. Hey. Let the love
right.
flow unbounded.
There we go. Okay. Well, thank you all for being here.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
And those of you that keep coming on the line, I don't know if you've ever heard our conference line check in before, Carla, but that's what it sounds like. We have this beautiful bunch of people that somehow find us interesting and keep coming back. But it's actually not because we're interesting, but because their energies are present with us.
Right.
You know what I mean by that.
Oh, yeah. We were talking earlier about the fact that we just empty ourselves out and let ourselves be transparent and the love flow through us, not from us, but through us.
Yes.
And we just make a space for it to do that.
Anyone that thinks we're great is making a mistake. Okay? I mean, anyone that thinks we're exalted is making a mistake. We just all found ourselves in situations that if we didn't do them, we'd feel guilty because it was that powerful. And so somehow we had to find a way to be human and let the situation occur around us. I mean, that's my way of looking at it. And I think that's true in each person's case on the line here. You know, many of you hear Terry say, I tell Terry sometimes before these calls, I say, so Terry, are you ready? She'll say, I'm never ready. And
that's a new kind of battery. Never ready.
Never ready, right? Let's plug in Terry's never ready batteries. but I think that's just another way of saying she's showing up and going to be transparent, and the love that she's just there. And in all of our cases, we are who we are on this line. And when I first started doing this, I didn't know I could be who I was. I thought I had to be something special, act like something special. Did you ever go through that, Carla?
No.
No?
No, I was protected from that. I was totally involved from the beginning in learning how to channel better. So I was pretty much the librarian researcher with the whole thing, trying to figure out, okay, what made this reading better or not so good, and, you know, trying to figure out how I could serve better. So the ego was never involved at all. I never thought about it. I was just busy trying to do better.
Well, you were already a seasoned movie star.
Well, you know, you were talking about don't think of us exalted. A couple of times I have been forced to show that movie to people who insisted on putting me on a pedestal. That's my
right.
go-to for knocking myself off the pedestal is to show that movie.
right. Now, when I first met Carla and I discovered the movie, she lost this, but I sent it to her. I made like a little Word file, and there were clips of the movie on the internet. And I would take the clips, and there was this one clip of Carla laying in a bed. I don't think you were scantily dressed. Were you scantily dressed in that scene?
Probably. Was I tied up?
I don't remember. She had a telephone to her ear, and so it's a little caption under it, and I said, Carla calling Ra.
For those of you who don't know about the movie, my research partner, Don Elkins, and I were trying to break into the movie business so we could make a movie out of a book we'd written called The Crucifixion of Esmeralda Sweetwater. And so we found a guy who said, listen, if you've got a script that has sex and violence in it, I'll support it, because he wanted to make movies for the drive-in. So Don and I hunkered down to write a movie with sex and violence, and of course it turned out to be a comedy. What could we do? No. But anyway, the day before shooting, the lady that was going to play the topless role, there's the sex, she read the script finally, and she quit on the spot. She said, I am not a comedian, I'm a star. And she took off, and all of a sudden we didn't have our topless person. And here I am with a racklet rather than a rack, you know, a very small bosom, and the only one around. You know, we don't have anybody else that's female. So I became the topless one, and it was crazy because I was also the script secretary, and I was trying to keep track of each scene, you know, when it began and when it ended on the tape, you know, for the camera and so forth. And I didn't have my shirt on for about 3 days. Anyway, it turned out to be a movie that is unique, I will say that. And it's really bad. But on the other hand, it catches something. And a lot of people who have seen it say, you know, I wish that, you know, you'd gotten it out there more, because it definitely would become a cult film.
So, listen, if anybody wants to see Carla topless, what is the name of the movie?
The Girl Snatchers.
The Girl Snatchers. Just do a search, The Girl Snatchers, Carla Rucker, and then...
I don't think I used my name. I think I made up a name.
Did you? Well, look up The Girl Snatchers, Carla. I actually think your name is on there. I recall.
Oh, okay.
Do a search. I think it shows up.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, I'm proud of that movie win, because over half of all of the movies that get started, I mean, big budget movies and stuff, they never leave the can. They never make it to the screen. And somehow I managed to push people through and get it all done, and it made it to the screen. And it was seen, you know, by various people in the South mostly. And the neat thing of it was that the first night of a 3-night run, it, you know, it would only pull a little bit because there was a better known movie, you know, against it. And then after that, word of mouth was so much, we got everybody. Our numbers were fantastic. Everybody was wanting to see this crazy film. We managed to make a film crazy enough to be notable. So I'm proud of it for the simple reason that, you know, we did it.
Carla,
and
I think you missed,
it came out.
You missed your calling, Carla. It's like, I think the reason everybody went to see it was because of you.
Well, I guess so, because I did everything on the movie. I wrote it. I did the costumes, the props, the special effects. Me with special effects, that was a riot. Mm-hmm. I did it all. That set design, for set design, I went down to the Salvation Army's big place downtown. They have a great big place where they, you know, put furniture back together and put it out to the stores to resell. And I told him, I said, I have $27, and I desperately need to furnish my apartment. And I dressed, you know, like a person that only has $27. And he said, okay, you can have anything you want for $27. So I got the entire set decorated for $27.
Mm-hmm. that reminds me of a story. I'm going to mute the ding so when people come on, we don't hear it. Hello to everyone that just came on.
Entry and exit chimes are off.
Now, let me say, we are talking about Carla Rucker topless. But that's not why she's on this show.
No, not at all.
We will get to the reason why she's on the show in just a moment. But
You know, we were talking, Carla and I, and when you can be anything you can be, and when you can be authentically yourself, it's the easiest way for people to tune into the crazy stuff we do, the stuff that is not normal, the stuff that's interdimensional. And Carla reminded me of a story, and this is a short one. I know people don't like to hear my stories, but I tell so many of them, but it's funny. At one point in my life, years ago, I had a partner, and we had a product, and we went to some gift shows, and we were actually doing fairly well selling this product at gift shows. And so we went to the New York Stationery Show, which was a huge, very professional show. And we got to New York, and we neglected to book a hotel. And when we tried to get a hotel, everything was booked. And the only place we could get a room was at the YMCA. So we stayed at the YMCA in Manhattan. And, of course, it was a public bathroom. And you go to the bathroom, and there'd be all these signs that says, if you want to get laid, Shirley's in room 7. And I won't go on to the other signs that were on the men's room's wall, but they were just full of solicitations like that. Well, you know, we went back to the bedroom we were sharing, and it was pretty dirty. We tried to get it all together. And in the morning, we had to go to the New York Stationery Show, and we neglected to bring tablecloth for our table. So what we did was we took all the bedding off the bed, took it down to this very professional show, put it on the table, tried to cover up the stains, and we went through the show, and we actually were successful. I think we sold $40,000 worth of product at that show.
Wow.
And, I mean, it was more money than either of us ever believed was possible to do in 3 days. But it was all on the YMCA's bedspread.
Well, congratulations for that, Bud.
Well, it wasn't as good as making a movie, Carla, okay? But particularly topless. But today, let's get back to the real part of the show. Now that we've relaxed the energy, everyone knows we're human. Just to give a proper introduction, if there's anyone new, Carla went on, she had a partner who she made the movie with named Don Elkins. And Don kind of had a hobby, an avocation, an interest in what's commonly called channeling. And he would lead channeling groups in Louisville?
Yes.
Yeah, in Louisville, Kentucky. And
yes.
He would get all these different people to channel, and there were people that were channeling deceased friends or people. There were people that were channeling people that said they were in spacecraft and ETs. And at one point, Carla was channeling, and Don asked a very deep question, and not the normal question, apparently, because when he asked the question, Carla immediately went into a deep trance, and this voice came through her that said, "I am Ra." And no one knew who Ra was. And Ra said, paraphrasing, that because of the nature of the depth of your question, it called on us to bring our message through. And for the next 4 years, Carla was answering questions from Don, and this Ra voice was answering through her. And Ra was explaining itself to be not an individual entity, not a deceased entity, but a group entity, or they called it a social memory complex. I call it sometimes a group soul, and they said they were outside of time and that they were worked with, they had had bodies, and they had gone through evolution, and they'd gone through millions of years of evolution, and they had evolved to the point where they never had, they didn't have bodies. They operated as a team.
Well, they had bodies, but the bodies were made of light.
Okay. But not bodies as we would know them. I mean, they were energy bodies, so to speak.
Right.
And that they were a helper and guide for planets at lower levels of evolution, where the inhabitants of the planets were still going through reincarnation. And that they had particularly chosen this group, the Carla Ruckert, Don Elkins channeling group, to speak to, because they felt that this group had a very high intent. And normally, when they come through people, it gets corrupted. So they were having a hard time finding anyone down here who they could trust to bring their messages through, and they chose Carla and Don. And so
and
for
Jim.
4 years, and Jim. Jim was there. Was Jim there at the beginning?
Yes.
He was.
As a matter of fact, he was the reason that it came through at all, because he had so much energy, and he was an incredibly good battery.
Okay.
And I was only able to carry that very high vibration because I had that energy from Jim to support me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sort of like Don was wisdom, I was love, and Jim was power. That was the triangle.
And so for 3 years, from 1981 to 1984, I think?
Yeah.
There was a series of questions about who Ra was, how they worked, how the universe worked, how all kinds of questions that I don't believe the answer was ever presented for public consumption in the history of humanity. And, of course, the question is it true? Were they really who they said they were? This is where you have to actually read their words, which you can download for free at Carla's website. You can buy the books if you want hard copies at Carla's. You sell the books on your website, right?
Yeah.
One
neat thing that is going to happen soon is that people will be able to purchase the actual Ra sessions and listen to them as they were originally done. I think it's $3 a download.
Okay. So stay tuned and watch for the sessions, and you can read the PDFs for free.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was originally doing the study of David Wilcock, the way I ran into Carla is that David kept raving about her. And he had an abridged version of the Law of One. It's called the Ra Law of One series. He had an abridged version on his website, and I read it. Then I went to Carla's website, and I said, is this woman for real? And then I went to Laughlin, because I heard Carla was going to give a talk there, and I wanted to meet her. I wanted to look in her eyes. So I drove to Laughlin. I don't think
I invited you.
Did I talk to you on the phone before that?
Yeah. No, I don't know. I think it was email, but I invited you. You were so surprised that I would actually let you in.
Right.
Yeah.
So I went to Laughlin, came in, and of course we had dinner together. She did a little channeling session for a group. And of course, my most memorable event there was manning Carla's table. Because as a speaker, she had a table. And she kept raving that I was the best Ra book salesman that she ever saw.
Oh, he's the best salesman in the universe.
And she never gave me any commissions either. So that's okay. In any case, we talk often. Carla's my guest once a month on Mondays, on our Monday call. If you on our schedule, you can watch for it. And if you're not, it's the fourth Monday on the call. And we've had conversations about all kinds of things on this call, from ETs to Jesus to love. And we usually pick a topic. And the topic this evening was, and Carla suggested this. I had an irate email from somebody that said, why don't you let Carla pick a topic? Why do you always pick the topics? So I said, Carla, what do you want to talk about?
So she gave me a bunch of choices, and we came up with angels. And so I decided, not being an absolute expert on angels, that I was going to let Carla and Terry talk to each other about angels, and I would be in the background. But before we do that, I thought I'd help get the juices flowing, and I was going to ask Carla and Terry to say what they really like about each other, and then we could start. Mm-hmm. Of course, that way we'll really I happen to know they like each other. That's why I can ask that. Otherwise, I could be big trouble. But who should we start with? Should we start with Terry? Who do you think we should start with?
Well, you can start with me.
I can? Now, that's very bold of you. Okay. Now, what do you like about Carla, and how has Carla touched you?
She's got a very loving nature, which is open and like accepting and gives a person love, and I think that that's one of the main things a person needs. And so it's a real carrier wave for anything she brings through, because that shows and comes out. And I feel accepted and nurtured, and I also like the openness with which she can bring through the pole and before the La group, and that touches me.
Okay. That was great. Thank you. And Carla, your turn.
Okay. I love Terry because Terry is an incredibly honest and authentic person. She is true to herself at all times. She dedicated to serving, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it takes her out of her comfort zone. She simply wants to serve, and she does a beautiful job of it, and I love her channeling and everything about Terry. I haven't met you in person, but I think if we could meet, we'd probably just be giving each other a great big hug.
Yes. Yes.
Terry, do you have any rebuttal? Terry used to be a legal...
Rebuttal? This is a debate.
But I just really... touches me.
Yeah, we just spoke, Quinn. We just spoke.
All right. So now, I'm going to shut up. And we have two fairly shy people, I think. Carla is... I don't know if I'd call Carla shy. I don't know. What do we call it? You do have a shy side.
Well, when I'm being me, I'm shy, but when I'm letting spirit flow, then spirit's not shy.
So I decided it would be an interesting experiment for me to shut up and let Carla and Terry start talking about angels. And it may be awkward at first, because Terry is really shy. But when she gets into it, and, I mean, if you really get stuck, I'll come in, and I'll help pump the energy up, okay? I'm not going to go to the bar. So, on that note, as Doug would say, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and go.
Well, one of the things is I could tell my experiences with angels. I have a number of experiences, and perhaps the most profound was when John was passing into his transition. And I was sitting by his bedside, and I kept, you know, hoping and hoping that all their analysis were wrong and his body wasn't shutting down. but it was. And his daughter, John's daughter, Jane, was with me. And I saw an angel come into the room. And he was, the angel was just monitoring what was going on with John. And it struck me because I could see the angel. The angel was white, and he had wings, and he was like a Sumitomo wrestler. And he was muscle. And he was taller than John, and John was 6'1". And he was quite stocky, but it was all like muscle, angel muscle. And I thought, that's really interesting, because here's John's guide to the other side, and he has a real big presence that's bigger than John's and stronger than John's body was, and that he could command the space from this stocky, beautiful angel body. And he would come through and he would monitor John, and as if he was taking stock of how John was doing and how fast his body was closing down and when he would be ready to go to the other side. And then he would leave. And so I told Jane that I saw the angel. And so when John stopped breathing, I signaled Jane. And Jane said, "Do you see any angels?" And I looked, and there was that same angel. And it's like he was a guide, and the entrance to the tunnel of light appeared. And I discovered during the whole process of John's being there, really sick, and I mean, he was injured. He was in an accident. And so I discovered that every now and then he would leave his body, and he would, like, be listening to everything we were saying. And he was getting everything, even though he was unconscious. And John would be there. He would look at us from not within his body, but he'd be watching us, and John would be thinking that Jane and I looked like alien creatures or something. And so whenever that happened, I would say, "Hey, John," and I would bring John into the conversation, and he would get connected again. So when the angel appeared and the tunnel of light appeared, I said to John, "Let the angel show you the entrance to the tunnel of light." And I said, "Don't give the angels any trouble." Like, I figured a little bit of humor would help John. And so then the angel guided John to the tunnel of light, and John went in. And then I followed John in to the tunnel of light because I was scared he would back out. And I wanted him to have a secure transition. But it was very interesting that the angel appeared as a guide to just make sure that John was okay and that his transition went well. And it did. And John went into the tunnel, and I told him, go find Robert Frost, because he was very good friends with Robert Frost. And so John really liked that. And he turned around and he asked me to come with him. And I said, no, John had to go first and check things out. And we conversed some more, and then he went on ahead. into the tunnel, further up the tunnel. But that was one of my first experiences, one of my outstanding experiences with an angel. And I have other experiences, too, that are extraordinary. But perhaps due to time, I ought to let Carla talk.
Okay. Well, I'll tell about the three kinds of angels that I happen to have seen, and then I'll talk a little bit about what the Confederation sources say about angels, because I think it's really interesting. The three times that I've seen angels, one was when I was going through my husband divorcing me, and of course it was a stressful time, and all of a sudden, one morning, I was sitting there kind of gloomy, and I looked over and I saw a red-headed angel sitting on the edge of the wastebasket, and he looked up at me and he said, "My name is Michael," and I said, "Hello, Michael," and then he disappeared. The second time that I saw angels was at Calvary Episcopal Church, a downtown church that was built during the Victorian era, and the angels that I saw then, I saw them almost every Sunday, you know, every time I went to the church, they were Victorian too, you know, the pre-Raphaelite movement. They looked like that, flowing robes, flowing hair and stuff. And the third was when I moved into this house, and I was very concerned about Don at that time. It was not too long before his death. He was having a lot of trouble mentally. And I climbed the stairs feeling, you know, woeful in heart. And I got to the top of the stairs, and at the top of the stairs there's a bank of four windows that are 3 by 6 feet. So it's beautiful, shows the whole backyard. And clustered around those windows were angels that were purely white. I didn't really see anything but the whiteness of them, as if everything was bleached out. But there were just masses of them. And I was told later that, as a matter of fact, the Ra Group told me that the house was blessed with angels because they had frequently been invoked by the previous occupant of the house. Looking at the time, I think I'd better talk about what the Confederation says about angels. They say that there is a hierarchy of energies. We show the hierarchy of energies, for instance, in our body, that the cells belong to the skin or the liver or some organ or the blood, and all of those energy fields are held within an energy field called the human body. So there's a hierarchy there. Well, there's also a hierarchy of angels. And I'm going to read from Kuo, February 12, 2011. Quote, "The hierarchy of the angels of which you have asked is just as regular and predictable. You have angels at the level of the Creator, and you have angels at the level of personal angels. You have everything in between. They carry responsibilities according to their hierarchy. What makes angels unique is that they have never left the vibration of the Creator. They have never departed from the one original thought of unconditional love. They have never incarnated, and they never will. While they have characteristics that can seem to be like a personality, to say that angels have a personality is to anthropomorphize incorrectly. Angels, they go on to say, are love. Angels are love, responsible for realms in a hierarchical manner. There are those which work with your sub-logos, the sun, in creating the archetypal mind and the blueprint for the densities of this particular creation. I believe that those are the entities that Terry is working with, those connected with the sub-logos, those that have to do with creating the earth as it is. Then there are angels who are attracted to vibrations and flock to those whose vibrations are beautiful to them. Now, there are two basic energies which angels have to offer, according to the Confederation. One is a simple energy of love itself, and the other is a feeling of safety. So love and safety. Angels, they go on to say, also have connections with the four elements and the four directions, so that as you become more and more aware of the correspondence between certain archangels and certain energies, certain powers and certain directions, you become more able to cleanse your habitation or the area around you with the help of the archangels. Then they talk about another class of angels that have had incarnations, and they become weary of incarnating, and instead of moving into the healing of the incarnation and the choosing of another incarnation, these people move into the angelic realm. They're able to become angels because of their innocence within incarnation. Naturally, these entities are usually small children. Then they talk about that it's important to thank the angels and ask the angels, because the angels cannot come to you and work with you unless you ask them to. So you need to ask them for their help. They're right there, but they cannot infringe on free will. And they talked about something that I didn't know that they were aware of, but of course they are. And I'll just read it to you. One way that this instrument and the one known as Jim ask for the angels' help is when they bathe. For angels are very good at magnetizing such substances as water or oil. And if asked, angels can place healing energy into the bath water or shower so that the water carries the vibration of love and healing. This is also true of substances such as food. If you ask the angels to help with the preparation of a food, they are able to help you magnetize love into the food. Homely chores such as chopping wood or cleaning house are ennobled by the angels as they aid you in magnetizing love to the motions that you make with your body and the thoughts that you think with your mind. Now I'm going to Ra, and Ra has a few things to say about angels. They talk about the dark angels, and of course that would figure there's always a balance in things, so there would be the fallen angels or the dark angels, and we're familiar with them and what they desire to do on Earth since it's their realm. Then more importantly, I think it's interesting to note that the Ra group considers angels to be part of the Confederation. Let me quote from the 19th reading, question 7. A portion of the Confederation which is not working with third density, that finds its aid best used in other harvests, that is second density harvest, is responsible for aid in these harvests. The Confederation of which stated previously in these sessions is composed of many of those in other densities, in your own density, within your planetary sphere, and within the inner or angelic realms. Each of these entities developing a mind-body-spirit complex, and then developing a social memory complex, and then dedicating this social memory complex to the singular service to the one creator, may join the Confederation. Let's see. Angels work with you when you are going to incarnate. The way Ra says incarnation works is if you're not a real old soul, then you incarnate automatically. If you're an older soul, then you can take responsibility and you and your higher self can choose what to do. But for those who are not yet aware that they are that powerful, there are angels that help with incarnation patterns. And I'll read this to you to get it right. There are those directly under the guardians who are responsible for the incarnation patterns of those incarnating automatically, that is, without conscious self-awareness of the process of spiritual evolution. You may call these beings angelic. They are, shall we say, local or of your planetary sphere. And then Ra says about the harvest, that there are three levels watching over the harvest. The first level is planetary and that which may be called angelic. This type of guardian includes a mind-body-spirit complex totality or higher self of an entity, and those interplane entities which have become attracted to this entity through its inner seeking. Then the second class of those who ward this process are those of the Confederation, and the third are the guardians. So the harvest is automatic in that it happens when it needs to happen. But each of us get to walk those steps of light to see how much we've learned and if it's possible to move on to fourth density or if we need to repeat. Okay, now Ra says finally that all entities have is their guides or angelic presences. And I think that's really important. Nobody's left out. Everybody has his or her angels. You simply need to ask them to be with you and to help you. And they will be so glad to do that. All right, I skimmed real quick through my database on angels so that I could be as as accurate as possible. But I have experienced angels all my life. I have an ongoing conversation with Holly, who I call the Holy Spirit Holly, and it's an angelic presence. And indeed, I have channeled Holly, and there's a book out that we have. It's called The Book of Days, and it stems from a time where I was trying to learn how to tune my very best and to challenge spirits my very best. I was really trying to do as well as I could with that and get better. And so Jim would be so kind after our morning offering together to put the tape in the tape recorder and push it down and record what it was. And what I was trying to do basically was I was practicing my my way of accepting the spirit, you know, challenging the spirit and deciding that, that was an okay spirit. So then I would have the spirit on the horn, and it felt funny just to say, well, thank you, I was just practicing. So I would ask for a thought, and they would give me just one little crystallized thought. Well, I did this for about 4 years, really working hard at the craft of channeling, and I had more than enough to have a reading for every day of the year. So we put it out as a Book of Days, Channelings from the Holy Spirit. And it's available either free, you know, on the web at www.lresearch.org or from our store if you want to have the book. It's a beautiful book. So I love angels. Angels are a very big part of my life. And I just really encourage everybody to open themselves, open their hearts to the angels, and know that you have your very own angel that wants to love you and keep you safe. Back to you, Terry.
Okay, I've got a question. You said that the angels had two things that they offered. One was love and the other I didn't get.
The other was to make you feel safe.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Got it.
Yeah.
Carla?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't mention Rose.
Rose?
Yeah.
Did I give you an angel one time? Oh, you're talking about when I was in a seance, yeah. I was in a seance one time. And this... Okay, this little girl, angel, just materialized out of thin air. This was a very valid experience. And it came over and asked if it could be with me because it liked me, and it promised to help me find lost things. I said, sure, you could be with me, and it just sort of melted into my, you know, lap, and it was hugging me, hugging my knees, and then it disappeared. But Rose has always been with me. Thank you. I'd forgotten that.
I think Terry needs to borrow Rose sometimes.
And I lose things.
I do, too. It's just horrible. I'm thinking about something, and I'm sort of in the moment with that. And things like purses and sweaters it all goes by the wayside. It's sad.
I know that feeling. I know what you mean.
Yeah. That was Doug that came on. Did you hear what he said?
Yes.
He said that he had to stop, but we could go on.
No, we didn't have to stop. We can go on because there's no show coming on after us.
Oh, so this is continuing. Oh, good, because Terry didn't get a chance to talk after that. I was really trying to get in the things that I was aware of from the Confederation because I thought it was a real valid source.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I can tell you about, I had angels with me. I remember being in the angelic realm, and I used to debrief people when they would come back to the angelic realm, and from the earth plane, and their attention would be all wrapped up, and I couldn't get their attention into the present now moment. And I would work with them and work with them, and I'm like, kept on, well, you know, what is this that they're so wrapped up in something when they get here from the earth realm? And I said, I'm going to go to the earth realm and see if I could determine what it is with these people. So I got together with a group of angels, and they said, you can't go alone. We're going to go with you. And so, because we know it's tough down there, and we're going to just all go as a group, and we'll protect you. And so we all came to Earth and had a series of incarnations, and it wasn't very long before I got totally messed up and had incarnation after incarnation. But yet the angels were there as kind of a stabilizing force, which was really, really helpful. And then I remember as being Catherine in the past life when I used to have this game when I was really little, and the game was to have the angels carry me downstairs.
Oh, wonderful. Now,
one of the angels, his wings were about 5 feet high, and so he was really strong. And it's like my mother of that lifetime got really mad at me because she said, you're going to hurt yourself, and don't do this anymore. And she would order me to not do it, but it was so much fun that I'd still do it. And so then in this lifetime, they were here as a stabilizing influence, too. And I was sitting in the living room with Daphne one day, and Daphne looked at me, and she could see the angel with his wings. She was really surprised. She said, those wings go almost clear to the ceiling. And so we kind of began to distinguish ourselves, who were the angels and who was I in this lifetime. And we had one experience in this lifetime where we met a spirit that he was just so overwhelmed by everything that life in this density, and he was himself. And so I took him back to heaven, and I said, work with him. And so what they did, there was a cloud that they have, like a cloud machine that is so, it wraps you in beautiful light, and it gives vibrations of being totally loved and totally safe, so the individual can get oriented and begin to find his own center. So they wrapped him in this cloud of it's not mist. It's just this. It looks like an actual cloud that they wrapped him in, and so it's like they have workers there that know how these technologies work, and they just took the individual and just knew exactly what to do to help them. And so that was a really good experience.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit of my angel experiences.
That was so neat. My best angel story is from a woman with, I think she had 6 kids. She worked very hard, and on Saturday morning, she always hoped to sleep in, but of course that was a lost cause. One Saturday, she was able to sleep in. It was 9 o'clock before she got up. She said, "Oh my heavens, I must get downstairs and feed the babies." And so she hurried to the kitchen to feed her chicks, and there was a big cast iron frying pan that was full of bacon grease, and there was the table with obviously the kids that had bacon and eggs. And the oldest of these kids was 7, you know. They didn't make those. Mm-hmm. So she said to the kids, "What happened?" He said, "Oh, you know that angel that we told you about that comes and sits on the end of the bed when we go to sleep?" And she said, "Yeah." Of course, she never believed it, but she wanted to be nice. And she said, "Well, he decided that you needed some sleep, and so he fixes breakfast." And, you know, there was the evidence right there.
Oh, that's great.
Okay, I wanted to assert something. I'm being good. You guys are doing great, by the way. But I was thinking, I know if I was listening, and one of the people just listening, they're thinking, "Oh, those guys have angels, but I don't have an angel. I'm not worthy of having an angel. How do I know that I can have an angel? Where's my angel?" Why don't you, maybe there's some tips to give somebody on how to connect.
I'll tell you how it works. You have to believe, and then it works. I remember...
Like Santa Claus.
not like Santa Claus. Get real. My mother, for instance, at one point told me that there was nobody there. She didn't know how to pray. And I told her, I said, "Here, I'll tell you what you do." I said, "Talk to your bedpost. You can see the bedpost, right?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "You can even see it at night, right?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "Okay, talk to the bedpost that's on the right side of the bed as you're looking at it. Stay to your left. And just tell the post everything." And so she started doing it, and a couple of weeks later she came to me and she said, "Carly, you're not going to believe this, but the bedpost talked back." And she, you know, she got it after that there was somebody there. But you just have to put yourself out, open yourself to the possibility. You know, clap if you believe in Tinkerbell. And then you just launch yourself into midair. You remember the cliche phrase of the divine leap or something like that, the leap into faith that philosophers talk about. Well, that's what it is. You take a leap into midair saying, "Yes, I believe I have my angel. Angel, will you come to me? Will you be in my heart? Will you help me?" And just let go, and you'll feel that angel. If you don't feel it the first time, just keep doing it. It'll come to you, because they are just as real as you or I, and they really want to help you. They really want to love you and make you feel that all is well in your world, and that you are basically a safe person, that you're protected. You're protected by love.
You know, I think that some people, if they said, Terry is describing having an angel with wings that she saw, and Daphne saw it, and maybe the people that are listening, maybe they wouldn't see the angel with wings. But I think something you might try is to say, "Okay, if there's an angel around me, I want to feel you in my heart." And mm-hmm. Notice if you get a little upliftment in your heart, like
Was that it?
Or a lot.
Or a lot. You
yeah.
know? And, okay, I can feel you. Is that you? And see if the heart goes... And, and make pretend, you know, it might be your angel, or maybe you're making it up. But it doesn't matter, because your heart is opening up, and that's all that counts. But if you keep doing that, you might develop a relationship and say, okay, I'm ready. Are you there? And suddenly, you've developed a thing that can open you up, and maybe you'll get a bigger confirmation on how to work with that angel. Like, if you have an angel in your space, what would you do with it? What would you want it to do for you? How could it help you? How could it help you help others? Could you send it to other people for blessings? Could you learn how to do that? You want to share that, Carla?
I have sent angels to lots of people, and most of the time they can feel them as soon as I tell them. And I tell them that you have to ask them. And so they'll say, okay, angel, would you please, you know, show yourself or give me some hint that you're there. And they get confirmation, as you said, Wynn, in the heart usually, that the heart, it feels warm, and there it is. It's just solid, and it's subjective, you know, but everything in having to do with the spiritual walk, whether you're on your own or whether you're in church or whatever you're following, your own path, the path of Christianity, the path of Krishna, the path of, you know, whatever, nothing can be proven one way or the other. This is the way spirit works. It's entirely a matter of faith. And that leap into faith is the most important choice that you can make. Because once you make that leap, then you discover that you're walking on solid air and you're able to move in a way that you never thought you could, because you feel that support from your angels.
There's this thing that what you focus on is what you get. So if a person is focused on, like, I'm alone, then they're kind of like open up this alone portal where there isn't anything there. That if they refocus and focus that the angel is there and talk to the angel, and then they will begin to refocus. As if they were refocusing their whole eyesight, their lens, their view into what's around them, and then they will be able to see more and be aware that there are angels there.
That is so true. Not everybody is interested, but I think if you are interested, it definitely is going to be very much a good experience for you. I have sent people any number of angels, and if I think that somebody needs an angel, I'll ask the angelic realm, okay, who wants to go? I'll get a name, and I'll write an email, okay, I'm sending you Robert, you know, sending you Henry, and
hey,
it works.
I got a great idea. Why don't we... I'll pose this, and if you have any objection, you can say no. Why don't we just send angels to everybody that's listening right now who asks for an angel to come visit that?
That's lovely.
Now, how should we do that? You guys figure it out. You're the angel people.
Heavenly Father, let your spirit be upon us. Let the angels that you have created move to those people who love you and who are thirsty for the Spirit. Let angels come to each and every one. We pray in the name of love and of light.